welcome you back. It is another edition of Inside Boxing Live presented by PPV.com. It is Dan Cadobio. It is Chris Algieri. And Chris, I'm very happy today. I'm always happy when we sit down and we talk boxing. But I'm happy for my New York Yankees claiming the American League championship. 15 years in the making. My guy Giancarlo Stanton looking like a prime Marvin Hagler, smoking home runs. What a freaking game, bro. I love the Yankees. I love boxing, but I love the Yankees too. How are you, Chris? Are you riding as high as me and the Yankees?
I am a Yankee fan, of course, and a New York fan, as of course. There we go. Inside Boxing Live. A boxing fan first and foremost. But yeah, no. It's important when the Yankees are doing what Yankees do, and that's when.
Get hate. There's a lot of hate. You know, there's a lot of hate in the boxing world coming my way.
Guys, bring it on. Bring on the Yankee hate. Bring on the Yankee. I work with some LA guys. They love the Dodgers. I'm like, get the out of here.
Yeah.
Yankees, New York, whatever. Even if you're a Met fan, listen, I respect my Met fans. I'm not a Met fan. Never been a Met fan any time in my life, but I'll take the Mets over the Dodgers any goddamn day of the week.
Yeah, it's crazy times here in New York. The Mets are still alive as we record this on Sunday at 5:30. Cannot be the case if when you tune into this later in the week. But my Yanks are in. That was fun. I had the double screens working Saturday night. I had Amazon Prime on for a shocking main event that saw Tim Tszyu get pummeled.
Yeah.
To put it lightly, pummeled by Bakram Murtazalayev. And I had the Yankee game on the other screen, and I was doing two things at once. I did a reaction video. My brain was not properly working. I said, Bakram Murtazalayev knocks out Tim Bradley. And I just posted it. And everyone's tagging Tim Bradley in the video. I'm like, why is everyone tagging Tim Bradley? Because I was doing too many things at once. You ever do that when you have too many screens going? Like, I was trying to create too much content. But that's what
I've never done that because, you know, that is my life, and I'm just good at it. But, you know, make mistakes.
Well, I am good at it. I am very good at it, damn it. This episode's brought to you by PPV.com. We're getting closer to the Tank Lamont Roach pay-per-view that is going to be announced soon. I think there's going to be a New York City press conference that I will attend, and I will interview Tank, and I will ask him what he thinks about Shane Mosley saying that he would take his lid off. But Lamont Roach versus Gervonta Davis is the next one. And you can order that on PPV.com as well as AEW Wrestling and all sorts of fun stuff. So thank you to our PPV.com friends for sponsoring every episode that we do here twice a week. We were with you last week where we told you about Bakram Murtazalayev and how dangerous this guy was. Should we just get right into the main event? Like, shocking stuff. Like, one of the more shocking upsets we've seen in a while, because Tim Tszyu was a heavy favorite. He was a huge favorite on the scorecards, the betting odds. Bakram was a plus 1,200 for a stoppage for him, which no one thought.
I think it was 5-1, right? I think
7-1.
Was it 7-1 at the time it actually came to fruition? Because I mean, we were talking about it last week, and it was 5-1. And I did a bunch of interviews about it. I'm like, that's way too wide. 5-1 was way too wide. 7-1 is absurd. Because listen, I had a funny situation last week. I'm in Tampa, Florida, getting ready for our Pro Box.
It was on the TV, right?
On Wednesday night fights.
TV in the bar.
Randomly, I'm at my favorite cigar bar in mm-hmm. Plant City, because there's only one. And I'm there, and I'm having a cigar, and all of a sudden, Dan, you know this. You're a boxing guy. You walk into a bar or a restaurant or whatever, and there's TVs and there's boxing. It could be your uncle versus your cousin. You don't care. You're watching the fight.
Well, here in New York, it's usually like a Broadway boxing that I was on,
which is fine.
In 2018, they play the same one on SNY. To those New Yorkers, this is a very New York start.
And it might be you. It might be you calling the fight. Whatever. So like, I see fights on there. I'm like, oh man, all right, we got some fights on. I'm glued to it. And walking to the ring is Jack Colquhoun and Bakram Murtazalayev. And I'm like, oh my god, I've been looking for this fight. I haven't had to watch this fight up until, you know, to prepare for the breakdown of this fight, and I see this fight, and it was halfway through the second round, and I sent a video from the bar to Paulie Malignaggi, and I go, this guy is a goddamn nightmare. And he goes, yeah, that's a tough style. And I go, yeah, this is a really tough fight.
Bro, it was the way it went down. Like, it was a shocking upset, and we've seen upsets. Like, Sebastian Fundora upset Tim Bradley. We see upsets in the sport all the time. But not the way that one just went down. That was that didn't even resemble boxing. That looked like a one-sided barroom brawl. That was a pummeling. Yeah, Zoo was getting all over the ropes. They could have stopped that numerous times. Could have stopped that in the second round.
I think his corner should have stopped it as he came back for the second.
We will talk about his corner. We will talk about his team. We will talk about the armchair quarterbacks out there, the armchair managers out there in just a little bit. But a shocking, shocking result. And I don't want to hear from anyone out there that says, oh, I never really rated Tim Bradley that high anyway. Because
Tim Zoo. You keep saying Tim Bradley.
Holy, what is going on?
Dude, you're about to get fired from this podcast.
Tim Bradley? Why Tim Bradley? He's not even like...
I don't know.
I don't want to hear these people out there that say, I never rated Tim Zoo that high anyway.
That's crazy.
Because you did. Because last week on this show, when we were talking about how good Backroom was, and I was telling you about the 100 punches around, I was telling you about the jab, I was telling you about the wingspan, and we put out a clip on social media, everyone below it was like, what? Like, Tim Zoo's going to take this guy out in 3 rounds. Tim Zoo can beat Tim Zoo can beat Terrence Crawford. That's all I was getting back. And after Backroom does what he does, a few people recognize the show. I'm not looking for a pat on the back here on the show, but that's just what we're going to do. We're going to tell you both sides. And you know about Tim Zoo, but you did not. Most of you did not know about Backroom Murtazalayev. This guy, nor should you, because he was out forever. And he fought Jack Colquay, was his biggest fight, and he didn't look great in that fight.
Yeah, but
it was a shocking win.
I kept speaking highly about that fight because Jack Colquay is a guy that gives everyone trouble.
Right.
And he stopped him. And it was a war to a degree. Colquay's not a puncher. But I don't know. I was super impressed with that victory. And once I watched it, and I was like, yikes, this guy is tough and trouble for anyone. He's just an awkward, strong, big guy.
So he retains his IBF title. And I don't see a lot of fighters running in his direction. I mean, this guy has
zero. He got no choice. He's got a title, Dan.
I know. But he could be a legit boogeyman. In a lot of different ways. Boogeyman because of his style. Boogeyman because of the financial aspect of it, where he does not bring a lot to the table. There was not a lot of fans at this fight. It was a smaller fight. He does not come with a lot of fanfare. He does come with a title, and that's a big reason why Tim Zoo took this fight, was because, oh, IBF title. I can scoop up that and unify, and get myself right back in the picture. But Backroom was like, not so fast. Just get into the fight, because this was some shocking stuff. First round, Chris, Murtazalayev comes out pumping that jab, landing that jab. A minute 49, something very interesting happens. I wouldn't say clashed heads, they rubbed heads. There was a grazing of heads.
Yeah.
And Zoo touches the head because he has that V-shaped scar from the Fundora fight that's going to be there forever. He stops the fight. He stops the action. He touches it. He looks at his glove. It's in his head. And I posted it on Twitter, and it's blown up, because I believe that was the beginning of the end. His game plan was horrible, but I believe that was the beginning of the end. Your thoughts on that, because that was a very telling mental aspect of this fight.
I noticed that too, and because there was not a cut. It was not a vicious headbutt in it by any means. There was no blood.
The referee didn't say, like, look over to the commission and be like, no. You know, headbutt, he didn't even do that. It was nothing.
He was having flashbacks, and listen, fighters go through a lot, and what Tim went through in his last fight, that's PTSD to 1,000. And that's why a lot of people who are in the know are going to look at this and be like, man, why is this guy fighting this guy right after that fight with Fundora, where one, he caught his first loss. Two, he fought a guy who was 6'7" on a week's notice. Also had this vicious, terrible cut. The management of Tim Tszyu.
I know. Is so I don't want to get into it yet. I don't want to get into it yet.
We're going to get into it, but
we're going to get into it. But talk to me about the opening aspects of this fight, where Murtaza Liev is already pumping that jab, and we have a minute in.
No, forget the jab, because Tim is used to fighting taller guys with good jabs, and he gets it with some jabs early on. He's an aggressive guy. Tim never beats this guy. He could not. Tim's only way to fight is right in front of you. Fights at mid distance. And is just shorter and tighter and lets his hands go and is super aggressive and backs you up. This is not that guy. This guy, he hits too hard. He's too long. He fires from the outside. He fires from the inside. Doesn't care if you hit him. He's way too... They look like they were in three different weight classes. Tim looks like a blown-up welterweight. And Murtaza Liev looks like he fight at 168. The guy's jawline and cheekbones were sucked in on fight night. He looked like he had came down from 180 pounds easy, and Tim looks like he was eating pasta to make it from 47 to 54.
I've had the pasta at the Curry Royale. It's pretty good.
Different guys, different build, different everything. And listen, weight-wise, they kind of look the same, but they look like they were built on different things.
Was distributed different on their bodies.
Very, very different.
He looks like freaking Wolverine.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like he's made out of adamantium, to use your Wolverine reference.
But yeah, he right away, Tszyu is fighting at a close distance. He's not moving his head. Murtaza Liev is pumping the jab, and he's the thing with Tszyu that I didn't like. The first round, Tszyu had some success, and he's going to have success.
He landed
some great shots, and he landed a lot of good shots against Fundora in the first couple of rounds too. Yeah. And, you know, he has that great precise power, and I'm thinking, okay, he's looking good, but he also ate a ton of shots in the first round, and the broadcast team...
His power didn't look good at all.
Right. The broadcast team did not acknowledge it too much. They were acknowledging Tszyu having a good first round and Murtaza Liev coming out pumping that jab. So I believe that first round, Tszyu had some success. He got very cocky and he got very overzealous. And the second round starts, and that's when the wheels completely fall off. He goes down three times in the second round. One on an amazing left hook. He both hooked at the same time, and it was just beautiful. And from there, they were off to the races where
he never recovered from that shot.
He never recovered from that shot. And his legs were gone. It almost looked my brother, who does not watch a lot of boxing, my younger brother Robbie. He looked over at one point, and that was when Tszyu was like, he's almost upside down on the ropes. And bro's like, this looks like a cartoon. This looks like when you watch like Bugs Bunny, like a cartoonish beatdown. That's what it looked like, because he was getting every single home A side treatment. You know, the referee could have stopped that fight numerous times. After the second round, the doctor comes over and takes a look, and that's an extra 30 seconds of recovery time.
Wait. Yeah, that was – so I'm going to look at that differently. I'm going to look at that from a fighter perspective. If I am Bakram and I'm watching the doctor get him before the beginning of the round, I'm like, oh, this guy's fucked. I'm gonna come out guns blazing. That was not cool. That's not a doctor should not do that. If you're going to look at a guy, look at him in between the round, in the corner – Don't wait till the end of the break to start looking at a guy in the middle of the round while you're in the middle of the ring, while your opponent is staring across the ring watching the doctor check your eyes.
I'm looking at that like
I'm coming across this ring to knock your head off, which is exactly what Bakram did.
That must be protocol, because we see it all the time. Like the doctor doesn't do it during the corner. They probably want to give you that 1 minute to just be with your corner, and then it's usually once the bell rings, that's when the doctor will come over. And in Tszyu's case, it didn't help him, but you can just tell that they were really on the side, wanted Tszyu to win this fight, and he does not. The second round, he sees the final bell somehow. I'm not sure why he even went to the third round. Now we can get into the third round comes out, gets pummeled again, towel comes flying in, fight over. Bakram Murtaza Liev authors one of the best upsets of 2024. Yes, it was an upset. So some people out there saying this is not an upset. I thought he was going to win. No, you didn't. No one was picking this guy to win.
I love the revisionist historians.
Oh, we'll get into that because there was a lot of it and it annoyed me from people that I really respect in this business. So fight over. Matur Zhilaev gets the win. Unbelievable. We got to give him a lot of credit because the next portion of the show will be talking about Tim Zhu and slamming him. Usually how it works in boxing. You always focus on what went wrong and all that instead of acknowledging the winner. But man, this guy's a problem. This guy is a Murtaza Zhilaev is a big time problem. He fought an unbelievable fight. He was not given any real respect heading into it. We couldn't even pronounce his name properly. That's on us. But now, if you didn't know who he was, Chris, now you do.
To a degree.
I freaking just threw you an alley oop and you just kind of finger rolled it in there.
We'll see. I mean,
biggest win of the year right now.
Yeah.
Biggest upset.
That's great. I mean,
in the hottest division.
Yeah, but he's gonna have to keep doing this every single time because he has zero marketability. Zero marketability. Zero.
Negative, maybe. Maybe, yeah. Negative marketability.
His style's not fun. Yeah, granted, he had a great knockout. No. I've watched him. He's
80 punches around. That's fun.
It's not fun. It's when he at a world championship level. Like, yeah, cool. On the card, great. You got a guy who throws a ton of punches. He's fucking in there. He gets hit. Whatever. World championship level, no. He makes fights ugly. He's rough. He's rugged. But he's not like, I'm not talking about like a Maidana rugged. He's like a rugged, like, I don't even know.
Last night wasn't. Like, you only saw him for three rounds, and he looked like freaking a world beater. So
that's not the way he looks. That's not the way he fights. That's not the way he fights, guys.
Right. When I was watching him last week in other fights besides Koke, like, yeah, I will say
that. I've never seen this version of this guy against this level of opposition ever, which makes me kind of wonder, like, where did this guy come from?
The last.
Anyway. I'm not gonna get into the conspiracy
Dagestan, bro.
Of boxing. Nah, listen, he's been from Dagestan. Where did he come from last night? Where did this guy come from out of nowhere to show up?
Kareem Royale Resort. I stayed there. It's beautiful. Exactly. It's got great amenities.
So yeah, I've got some questions about that, which we're not gonna delve into right now. But yeah, no, I've watched a ton of this guy, and it's funny because I never saw the Colquay fight, and I finally did this last week, and I was like, oof, this guy is a nightmarish style because he's super rough, he throws really hard shots, he is strong, he's big for the weight class, but he's rough, and there's ways to beat guys like that, and in hindsight, Tim's not really the guy to beat this kind of guy, so I don't know if whoever picked this fight for Tim was not really looking out for him because Tim.
Hey, you want to get into that now? Let's get
Tim's
into it.
Tim's not a stylist. You need someone who's going to box this guy and footwork and do all that. And Tim's not that guy.
I tried to delay this as much as possible because I wanted to talk about the fight and I wanted to.
There's
get
no way to delay it. There's no way to delay it. The people handling Tim are doing a terrible job.
Okay. Well, yes. In hindsight, yes. There is a lot to be said.
In hindsight, it's been a year worth of terrible handling.
Yes, but I did not hear a single person say that last week. I did not hear anyone say, what are they doing putting him in with this guy? I don't know. Is it because no one cared about the fight? It wasn't the biggest hyped fight out there. It wasn't really marketed. It was a free Amazon fight, which is awesome. I thought that was great. I'd love to see more of them. I thought the pace was perfect last night. Three fights, fun fights. Awesome. Free if you have Amazon Prime. Love that. So I did not see a lot of people last week or in the lead up to this fight second guessing Tim Zhu for taking on this fight. I saw a lot of people Saturday night afterwards doing like a victory lap. People that I respect, former champions that have podcasts, saying bad matchmaking, saying this was a horrible idea. I thought we're supposed to be looking at these guys like take challenges. I thought Zhu getting a title shot after he was supposed to beat Fundora and he was on his way to beating Fundora, if not for a freak accident on the top of his head, gets right back in there, snags a title, maybe not going to be easy, but should comfortably win. I did not see any of that. That's why I say yes in hindsight. That's why I was a little annoyed with some of the lazy narratives that were pushed out on Saturday night afterwards. I didn't hear a single person say, maybe a few, but I did not see that. There was not a lot of that chatter, Chris, of, wow, this is a bad move. It was only afterwards. Not saying it wasn't a bad move, but I just did not see that. And I just, it's just armchair quarterbacking, which you see in other sports. And we saw it with this Mirtazalayev Zou fight.
Well, listen, in terms of being a bad move, yes, in hindsight, it was a bad move. But even prior, on our show, we were talking, listen, this is not an easy fight. This guy's tough. And I was doing some interviews last week, and people were telling me, oh, he's 5-1 favorite. I'm like, that's way too wide. This guy is very, very tough. I think Tim's going to win. I'm favoring Tim, but this is a very, very tough fight with a really rough guy who's big. And, you know, listen, a lot of times with these big, rough guys that are like that, you got to get first, got to get past the first three rounds. Tim didn't. So, and he didn't fight in a way where he was trying to get past the first three rounds. And this is what we get. I mean, it happens. It's, you know, like, listen, this is boxing. We're looking at world-class guys. Mirtazalayev is a world champion. He's a world-class guy and he can punch, you know, you gotta be careful. And Tim was not. So, you know, the people who are saying like, oh, this is a bad matchmaking, this and this and that. Listen, I'm sorry. Zou has backers. I'm a Zou backer as well. I mean, you gotta figure out how to beat these kind of guys. And, that style that he chose to enact was not it. And for all you armchair quarterbacks, all you revisionist history guys saying like, oh, I told you this is a bad idea. No, you didn't. No one said this is a bad idea. Just like you said, Dan. No one said, oh, beforehand. Now you're going to come back and say it? Okay, stop. Stylistically, yes, not a great fight. But you all thought Tim was going to figure it out. He didn't. So here we are.
Yeah, there's one thing that you can criticize. It's the style in which he decided to fight this fight. Yeah. He got very cocky. He got very overzealous. He did not move his head. He stayed in the pocket. He did not, like, the distance was horrible at which he was fighting. And also, this was a title fight. Like, this wasn't like, this was a chance to win a title coming off of a fight.
Rounds, bro. You got 12 rounds.
But, like, in terms of, like, the taking this fight and his team, they were presented a title fight against a very tough opponent. But if Bakram didn't have a title, would you look at this? I know maybe we wouldn't, but maybe fans would say, oh, this is a tune-up fight.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what it was like. Yeah. Literally, this is like, you never heard of the guy? Tune-up fight. The guy had a title from the IBF being the IBF. So therefore now it's like, oh, he shouldn't have done that. I know not everyone's saying this, but you know, I was just kind of annoyed to see it from like Sergio Mora, who I really like have a ton of respect for. But like, he's got his takes and that's fine. That's what makes the world go around. But like, bad matchmaking. I thought we're supposed to be like looking for
guys, there's no, it's not matchmaking, but it's his title, you know, on the line.
That's what I mean.
You take what you can get.
Listen, or he meant bad management.
Did I want to fight Ruslan Provodnikov? No. I got assigned Ruslan Provodnikov. That was my shot. Tim was coming off a loss. He got an opportunity to fight a world champion. It's not matchmaking. This is what you have.
Bad manage. He also said bad matchmaking, Sergio said, but he also said bad management.
I agree with that.
Like he should have. I guess, yes. Okay, there's nothing wrong with, now we can be armchair quarterbacks, but we weren't last week. So I just want that to be clear. Now we can criticize in hindsight because that's what also media does. Like, in hindsight, maybe they should have not taken a title fight like this right away. I don't believe that because I thought he looked, outside of the cut, he was on his way to beating Fundora, and he doesn't even have to take this fight at all. I love the fact that he was getting right back into a title shot. He is a big name. He is in the prime of his career. I don't think that's the way they looked at this. It's just get back in there. Like, it's almost like a gift that you have a title shot like this. I thought he would have to get back to the back of the line. That's just the one thing about boxing I don't understand sometimes either, is how can you go from losing to a title shot? But he had that opportunity. But if you want to poke holes now, Chris, and if you want to nitpick, you can look at his team saying, okay, guys, we're supposed to fight Keith Thurman in March. He's out. 10 days notice. We'll take Sebastian Fundora. We'll rematch clause now. We'll just shake hands on it. And that obviously turned out to be nothing. All right, you lose the fight. I'm going to take on a 6'1" Wolverine with an unbelievable jab and a right hand from the gods. Yeah, probably wasn't the best move.
Left hand, southpaw.
Both hands. How about that? Yet. From the gods. So, yeah, if you want to pick holes at Tim Zoo's management, which there were some chatters about it heading in, I'm sure he's looking at his team right now. I'm sure he's having questions with his lady. And, like, you know, who he's having a lot of questions right now. Did you see his post-fight interview?
No.
It was crazy. He said, some guy said, Tim, what are you thinking right now? What are you feeling? And he goes, what the fuck just happened? He had his head down. He goes, what just happened?
Well, he looked like that in the second round when he went down. He got up and he was like, where am I? What's going on? How am I losing everything to this guy right now? And you saw him going through an existential crisis in the ring as you're watching the fight. And it was hard to watch. It was hard to watch because he was really not there. And listen, you can say whatever you want to say about class and ability and skills, and you should have fought this guy. Listen, he was rocked. You know, guys, when you're concussed, that first knockdown, I don't know if I don't think he ever recovered. And I don't know if anybody listening has ever been knocked on their ass and had their brain rattled. I doubt it. I would say probably 1% of the people listening, I know what that's like. Listen, that alters you, not only for that fight, not only for that round, not only for that day, not only for that week. That shit can alter you for months, sometimes the rest of your life. And I don't mean psychologically, like, oh man, I can't believe that happened. No, I'm talking about physiologically.
Yeah.
Your body doesn't move the same way anymore when your brain gets rattled that way. So he was going through a lot of things at that moment that he's never been through. He's been down before. This was different. This was different. Mm-hmm. He was rocked bad. And I think that you got to take that into consideration when you think about how he reacted. And this is why they should not do post-fight interviews with fighters who've been knocked out.
Well, they didn't do one in the ring, which I liked.
They shouldn't do them ever. They shouldn't do them after a fight. Don't even get me in the locker room. Like I said, you're not okay in the locker room either, guys. People are concussed for weeks and months and sometimes years at a time. Mm-hmm. Don't talk to them afterwards.
That's why this sport is one of one. Because you're watching, like I was watching the Yankee game, and they're quote unquote fighting for their lives, and they're quote unquote battling
their lives.
But like they're using
they're fighting for $10 million.
I know, that's the point I'm making. they're swinging bats
for $300 million paydays.
Point I'm making is they always refer to these fights as fights, knock them, drag out, because they have a lot of the similarities and they have a lot of the analogies of a fight of two entities clashing. But in boxing, that literally you're watching a fight and you're watching someone in Zoo who was looking to right a wrong of his last fight. He has his dad there for the first time since his debut, which during the week was just drumming up all sorts of nostalgia and awesome. Love seeing that. They have a checkered past, not the greatest history. Love to see them together. That's in his mind. Also in his mind is, I need to get back to the top. I need to get back and be a champion again. Also in his mind is, there were some people criticizing the fact that, like, why isn't he fighting with Turkey? Why isn't he fighting some of these guys at 154? Why is he fighting in Orlando? Like, all that. I know maybe he's not thinking of all that, but just what you explained. But you get to watch it play out. That's why the sport is so full of drama, and that's why it's like one of one, because they're literally fighting. He's fighting for his career and he's fighting for what's next.
His life. And on a number of different fronts.
And where does he go next? Like Sean Porter, our friend, said this sets him back 2 years. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, did I speak about that with you? No, I did that for my article for Algeria School of Thought. A loss here sets him back way more. So the Fandora fight, which I think a lot of people didn't even look at it as a loss because he performed so well and also seemed like he was on the short end of the stick of some bad situations in that ring based on the doctor, the cut, the everything leading up to it, as you just alluded to earlier, Dan. But this is different. Losing to this guy, who is wholeheartedly unknown for anyone on this side of the world, actually anywhere, doesn't matter. I don't care where you are. Nobody knows who this guy is. Mm-hmm. And to lose the way he did, yeah. You know, like people ask me, what does Tim do now? I'm like, he disappears for a while. And he has to go underground and go get some wins over in Australia and fight on a local circuit and grassroots his way back. If he wants to do that. I mean, I'm sure he does. I don't think he's made enough money where he can just kind of sit on it. So 2 years is, it's pretty accurate from Sean. Pretty accurate.
2 years. Wow. That's another thing too with boxing. It's different than every other sport. The Cleveland Guardians get knocked out of the playoffs. They'll be back in April. They'll take two weeks. They'll go to the beach.
Yeah, they still got paid. They still got paid too this year. This whole season.
They'll go to the beach. They'll go on a vacation. They'll spend the holidays and they'll start hitting. They'll go to spring training.
Start hitting.
Yeah, which they did in December. They start hitting and they go to the spring training and then baseball starts up again in April. With Tim's 2 years, we're talking about. I mean, this is different. Boxing's different, man. Like, you're guiding careers. There's no schedule. There's no league. So your management is super important. And Tim's management, I don't exactly 100% believe this because I think he should have took this fight. Tim's management, you can make an argument, let him down. But he also has to make decisions too, Chris. You know this. You've had a team, and you've had a pretty damn good team. You're the boss. You ultimately make the decision. So they presented him this background fight. No one's putting a gun to his head. You know, there's another thing with boxing. I'm talking about how there's no schedule. It's a gift and it's a curse. You can turn down fights. You can take a softer touch. You can make your own schedule. So it's ultimately up to Zoo. I'm using a lot of stuff about his team, his manager, this, that, and the other. You know, Tim has to take some of the brunt here of the you know, a bad decision in fighting this guy too.
Yeah. So Tim's a fighter. Similar to how I was, I made some bad decisions in my career, and I had some pushback by the people around me as well, but not as much as you would think, you know, because a lot of the people around me trusted my decision making because I had gotten myself to such a high level on my own. Mm-hmm. But there were fights that just didn't make sense for me at the times that I took them. Errol Spence, for sure, didn't make sense. I had a knee injury. Stylistically,
what was the thought process there? I'm just curious. I never even asked you this before.
I didn't think he was as good as he was at the time, but also, you know, I don't know. I was training hard. I was looking for a big fight because I had the Pacquiao fight, I had the Khan fight, and then I overperformed so well in the Khan fight. I was supposed to get a get back fight in the summer, and
but year was that 2015?
2015. And I was going to come right back after the Khan fight, which people, you know, it was a hard fight. It wasn't that hard. I wanted to come back in August. And we're looking to do a fight actually in Stony Brook University at my alma mater.
Wait, I remember that.
Yeah. So they were talking about doing a fight there and making it happen. And I was obviously going to be the main event. We were going to have this big thing. And I was going to get a get back fight with a guy that, you know, made sense, whatever. My promoter at the time, shoestring promoter himself, ruins the deal. Which is what he does. He's not a deal maker. He's a deal ruiner. So he ruins this deal. And I sit. So after the Khan fight, which I, again, quote unquote, overperformed but still lost, I have all this hype around me. I don't fight for like 9 months because of said promoter. So then they give me a get back fight against Eric Bonet, who's a nightmare. Absolute nightmare. Everyone in New York knows how tough that guy was. And they put me in some undercard, whatever, in December. And, you know, I have this, you know, a tough fight that I win handily, but still, then I go into the Spence fight. So for me, I just felt so dejected. One, I thought I won the Khan fight. So I was very, very upset and dejected by losing a decision that I thought I won. Then I lose an opportunity in the summer for a real fight, a good fight for me based on business. Then also, this is also why my entire, legal lawsuit is going on with said promoter. Then I get this fight. I make such short money. It's absurd. I should write a book just on this to fight a really tough guy. He made more money than me, which is absolutely absurd. And then, you know, so for me, it was like, I needed to get back into the limelight, get back into a big fight. And Spence was just the wrong guy at the time. Not to mention, I hurt my knee in training camp, tore my MCL, which I had surgery for like the week after. And before the fight, I'm like, I couldn't move very well, but you know, I was like, I work this guy. I know how to fight. He hasn't been there at my level. And it was a bad idea. I needed someone around me to be like,
team?
I needed everyone around me to be like, no, bad fight.
Take us through the process of that. Like, all right, so Tim Zhu here is coming off a bad loss, and they presented the background fight. He ultimately takes it. You are presented Errol Spence. Is it a collaborative discussion between you, your trainer, your brother, family? Is it ultimately come down to you? Was anyone say no? This guy's freaking tough. Like, what was that like?
No, I mean, it was. We had a contracted thing where that was the fight. And listen, you can always turn down a fight, but I was like, no, I'm not gonna turn down. And I took it. And then I told everybody, and my brother was like, it's a bad fight. It's a bad fight. It's not a good style. I'm like, Mike, it is fine. It is what it is. I'm like, I'll be good to go. I'm going to camp. I'll figure it out. But everyone else around me, it was what it was. I didn't have anyone managing me. I was my manager. My lawyer didn't care who I fought.
It's your brother.
My accountant didn't care. My lawyer didn't care. You know, I didn't have a manager. I was a manager. I was a fighter. And my team.
I want my accountant just to be the accountant. Yeah, be good
exactly.
at that.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, but that was my team. My team was me and my accountant, my lawyer, and, you know, my team. So my trainers. So, yeah. But yeah, nobody pushed back other than my brother.
There's going to be a lot of thinking for Tim Zhu. There's going to be a lot of soul searching. They call him the soul taker, right?
Soul taker, yeah.
He's going to be doing a lot of soul searching now because the knock on his team was that, you know, they're kind of bold and brash and, you know, they kind of do this with a lot of fighters. And, you know, the Fundora thing was, in hindsight, just turned out to be a disaster. No rematch clause, none of that. And now this does not make them look good. He wins this fight, then you don't hear any of this. We're looking at him against Crawford. We're looking at him against Fundora. We're looking at him against Erickson Lubin and so forth. But that's sports. I mean, the second guessing is through the roof. I did not particularly love the second guessing, but I certainly understand where it was coming from. It's a hard sport, man. Guiding a career is not as easy as it looks. It's really, really tough. And now a bright star. We don't know. There's questions about if he'll bounce back. We talked about the 154-pound picture on last episode. Nothing has changed because Petr Zhukov is still the champ with the IBF. Crawford is still your WBA champion. Fundora is still the WBC, WBO. And we have these supporting characters as Madrimov, Zhu. Not Zhu. Ortiz, Boachuk, Conwell, Abel Ramos, Boots Ennis, maybe, because his dad's talking about going up. But what did change now is another piece at 154 shifts around this puzzle. Terence Crawford is not fighting Bakram Mataz-Alaev ever. Like, I put that at 0%.
0%.
So that makes that Canelo fight even more possible to happen.
Yeah, it's the
Fundora Spence, now I believe, like which we were told you that's going to happen. That's happening. So Mataz-Alaev, where does he go from here? Because he's got a tricky style. He has not much of a profile at all. I would love to see Mataz-Alaev versus Fundora. 2 6-foot-plus guys throwing hammers at it. I would love to see that.
I think it's going to be the winner, Bohochek and
Madrimov?
Madrimov, yeah.
If you want to go by the books, IBF, their next up is Erickson Lubin. Because if you did ask... Zhu did mention Lubin's name a lot in the lead up. So he said, I want Lubin next because he's ranked highly with the IBF. And then I want the Fundora, whoever winner.
Yeah, I can
so
see that.
Lubin,
but
that's not guys, a good, that's not a good style for Lubin.
Guys, who do we care about though? We care about the winner, Bohochek and Madrimov. And Lubin, it's kind of amazing that Lubin's still in the picture. Based on,
but he's got that win off of Abel Ramos.
Again, not a great win, but also
didn't think he won.
He's got some really bad losses.
He got his face refigured by Fundora,
and he got iced by Charlo.
That was so long ago, but that was an awesome fight.
One of the best highlight reel knockouts you're ever going to get.
I remember being ringside for that and being so shocked because it came so quick into the first round.
It was an amazing catch and shoot. Bang! It was
awesome.
Like, it was literally a textbook. Precision execution of what you're supposed to do with that. I mean,
forget that.
No, you can't. That should be, literally be in a textbook on how to counter, you know.
And that was on the undercard of a Wilder fight. Barclays was just pumping
massive,
out fight nights.
Massive, yep.
Yeah, there were once every other month. And I remember that Lubin-Charlo buildup was awesome because it was like stud versus stud. who's going to come out on top. Now, whoever wins this fight, the next two or three years of their career is going to be different than the other. And it ends so quick. I didn't even like, you don't even like see the punch ringside.
Mm-hmm. No.
It was awesome.
It was tremendous. I mean, technically super, super on the books. Like, I mean, textbook. Amazing.
Well, where is that guy? Jermell Charlo, a couple of people tweeted me about him. And I'm like, how can I properly answer this question for you? If the guy hasn't fought at 154 since the Castaño fight. Brian Castaño, that's May of 2022.
He's not coming to 54. I don't consider the Charlos top guys anymore. I don't think about them when we talk about like the top of the division of any, you know, cuz they're basically spread across three divisions at this point, 68, 60, 54. I don't consider them the top of any of them because they're just not active. They're not even on my mind. They're not there. Not that they're not good. Not that they're not super talented. Not that they don't have great records. They're just not there. They're not present. I can't picture them with any of these guys, especially where we're at right now with 54. These guys are dogs. We got guys coming out of the woodwork from the heart of Russia who are coming out and knocking out stars. You got guys at 60 where anyone could be come out and turn themselves into a legitimate champion. Who's the guy? Aziz? No, not Aziz.
Yeah.
Aziz.
No, Shiraz.
Shiraz. Oh, my goodness. I just DM'd with him the other day.
Really?
Yeah. He hit
the DMs.
Apparently, he had DM'd me a while ago, and I spoke to him. I didn't know who he was or what was going on. And then a couple years ago, and then he saw something I'd said about him, you know, praising his skills because he's fantastic. And he reached out and said, like, hey, I really appreciate you know, the kind words. And I was like, yeah, I'm just calling what That's I awesome. See. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal fighter. And a guy like that, am I going to think about Charlo when they got guys like that who are coming?
No, because Charlo is, they've made so much money, Chris. They are not young and hungry like some of these, like a Charles Conwell or a Boichuk.
I would like to see Conwell get in there, man. Conwell, he's talented. He can fight.
He's very good. He's very fun. He's with Golden Boy now too. And that they were supposed to move him, but I don't know what's going on with him. But there are a lot of names at 154. I would love to talk about a Jermell Charlo at 154, where he fits into this puzzle. But it's impossible. Like how I can't, because he hasn't fought at the weight since 2022. He hasn't fought in general since the Canelo fight. Canelo has fought three times. Canelo has fought since then. And
oh, wow.
Oof. Twice or three times. It was September he fought. Canelo fought in May. And then again, Canelo's fought twice.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, lining up another fight for May, and Charlo is nowhere to be found. Like, there's a Jermall Charlo rumor floating around about the Cornflake LaManna on the tank undercard. But you just can't think. You can't really think about him at 154. Crawford not fighting Murtazalayev. Fandora fighting Spence. Those are the champs. Murtazalayev is the other champ. He can fight Lubin because he's technically next up at IBF, and then he can see where the chips fall. But I'm happy for this guy. I'm happy for main events. You know, they are not the biggest promotion. They once were a behemoth in this sport, and it's pretty much just Kathy Duva and her daughter and some of the others in main events running the show there now. But they got a champ, and that was a huge win for him. I think it's upset of the year, right? I mean, unless I'm forgetting something.
Anthony Joshua.
What, Dubois?
Yeah, it's a big upset.
I think this is bigger in terms of odds. Fight Ghost, this guy does amazing work. He puts together the upsets of the year every year in terms of odds. I mean, odds, this is probably 7-1. That's up there.
That was such a bad. Vegas sucks. Like,
Vegas in hindsight, odds, once again, hindsight is no, the word of
dude,
this
I
episode.
I said that before. I said 5-1 was too wide. And this guy
plus 1200 for a knockout.
So what was Joshua? What was it?
7-1. It was like 3.
Yeah, was it 5-1?
No. 3-1.
Was that close?
It was closing. It was getting tight as the fight week went on because a lot of people were.
Anyone who has their you know, heart to the pulse, or their eye to the pulse, or finger to the pulse, knows that 7-1 was absurd for this fight. Finger to the pulse. 5-1 was stupid. 5-1 was stupid. I said it last week. 5-1 is a stupid spread for this fight. So 7-1, this guy needs to get another job.
Dude, the ear. This is my Dan Canobio bobblehead.
Oh, that's cool. How'd you get that?
My dad got it for Christmas. The ear of it just fell off, just like Evander Holyfield.
Well, there you go. You know, you should get a Mike Tyson one bobblehead.
Here's the ear.
Because there's plenty of those, and just put it right next to him and be like, arr.
Do you know the story behind the ear? Like, the ear was still in the ring, and they were the guy was brushing the mat afterwards when everyone left the arena.
And he found it?
He found the chunk, and he gave it back to Holyfield. I actually told that story to Logan Paul, of all people. He was asking about it, and it's just like one of those random facts that I know from my dad telling me, like, being there and, like, at that fight, and then him... like having a little, it's like a, what do they call that? Cocktail story? Cocktail party story?
Is that a thing? Cocktail party?
Cocktail party story. You're at a cocktail party.
I've never heard that term. Damn.
You're at a cocktail party. You're talking to a guy you never really met before. Maybe he's like,
Listen, I understand what you're talking about, but I've never heard someone say a cocktail
it's party a fact. Story. It'd be a fun if I was at a cocktail party and I would say if someone brought up Tyson or Holyfield, I'd be like, "Hey, did you know that ear? They found it on the ring, and the guy brushing it up with custodian."
And then the girl would walk away and be like, "Just give you a nod, okay." Cool.
I wouldn't say it to a girl.
I bet you would.
I'd say to the girl, like the girl's boyfriend, if you wanted, if I was trying to like befriend.
Well, the girl's boyfriend would be way more interested than her.
Right. The girl wouldn't. She would be like, "Wow, okay. Who's Mike? Okay. Mike Tyson? Isn't that the guy from Hangover?"
What a weird guy this guy is, talking about ears.
Should I make an announcement right now? Right here on the show. Big time announcement, Chris. Dan Canobio.
Hold your breath,
will
people.
Be part.
Hold your breath, people.
Dan Canobio, host of Inside Boxing Live, will be part of the Jake Paul Mike Tyson broadcast. Just got word. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I will be working with DraftKings.
Slow clap, people. Clap.
Thank you.
Scott.
Thank you, everybody out there. I will be working with DraftKings. I will be giving you some betting advice before the Katie Taylor fight and before the Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight to Texas.
You've been on a heater lately, so that's some good numbers, man. That's some good insight.
I think they took notice that I've been winning parlays. Did not win our parlay Saturday night, but I said to someone, a couple people were tailing it, and I said, you know what? When we get a crazy performance like we saw from Murtazalayev, when we get an awesome moment, I don't care about my parlay. I rip it up.
No, so you and I were both we're never married to our picks. Even if we lose money, because we love the sport. If it's good for the sport, we're with it, even if we're wrong. But.
Right. So I don't know. I'm headed down to Texas for that fight. I'm going to be doing some stuff during the week, too. Some cool stuff, some more announcements in terms of content. But you will see me on the Tyson Paul broadcast right before they make those walks. I'll be giving you some odds and stuff. So looking
That's
forward
awesome.
To that.
I probably won't be watching, but I might tune in for you.
I see you watching the Taylor Serrano fight.
Yeah. I'll watch that. That's real boxing. I'll watch.
They've added some crazy fights to this card. Bruce Carrington is now fighting.
I saw that.
I think that was like a Brownsville type of thing. They want to. I just think they're.
Well, like, I think they're being very smart with his marketing because that's where his strong point is at this point. He had a very underwhelming performance his last fight, and I think they want to put that in the past.
Yeah, but they're also tying in. They're both from Brownsville, Mike Tyson and Shu.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
They're doing it's a way for. I think MVP has reached out to a lot of different promoters. I think it's a very smart move to get.
They got to get Danny Jacobs out there, man. They got to bring him down.
Bring him in. That's a crazy broadcast team. I can't announce that yet, but there's some names and some faces that you're going to say, wow, this is crazy. Lucas Body is fighting Corey Marksman. Lucas Body knocked out Ashton Silva, which was probably the knockout of the year on the Jake Paul, Mike Perry undercard. Ashton Silva was a highly touted prospect, got knocked out cold, bro, by Lucas Body.
Yeah.
At 135.
Sick knockout. Corey he was also Marksman. Losing every minute of that fight.
Yep. And Corey Marksman is a guy that's fought a bunch of times on MVP, who's a really, really fun fighter. I love that fight, Marksman and Body. Shadeja Green was added to the card.
She's tough, man. Shadeja's tough. I like her. I called a couple of her fights.
Yeah, she's an MVP fighter. It's a 7-fight card. It's got a little bit of everything for, you know.
Where is the card going to be?
Jerry World. AT&T Stadium. Yeah. So, cool. I'm excited for it. We'll all be watching. Even the people that say they're not going to watch, they're going to be watching.
It's on Netflix.
You will. What else happened this weekend before we say goodbye? Yoenis Teles, won.
He's bad, dude, huh?
He's a good dude.
He's a bad boy.
I called a bunch of his fights on MVP prospects. He's knocking on the door.
I've called his opponent we had on ProBox TV a few times, and that boy can fight. And he's tough and strong. And Teles handled him very, very well.
He is really good, and he's knocking on the door at top 10 of 154. I called a bunch of his fights. He had an awesome knockout on the Spence undercard, Spence Crawford undercard. Mm-hmm. That was
Tapia, the kid Tapia.
That was an awesome fight,
dude. So another ProBox TV alum. He's fought on our air. He's good. He can fight.
Yeah, that fight was. I mean, they were both down. That fight was awesome. That fight was that whole card was fun. I mean, it was your free, quote unquote, free Amazon Prime offering, the first one. I had our boy Brian Campbell was on the call. Custer, Keith Thurman,
BC. Love me some BC.
Keith Thurman's interesting on the mic.
I can't believe they put him on the mic.
But. Yeah, he's weird because he's such a good interview and like he could talk.
He's weird because he's weird. He's a weird guy.
Right, but I thought that would like translate onto the screen where, you know, he didn't say a lot. Like his open, he was so quick. Where if you ever interviewed Keith Thurman, I've had him on this show. It's like he talks for like 30 minutes straight. And he starts going on these like philosophical tangents.
We had a very interesting interview with him in Vegas last year.
You guys had a very interesting just like interaction.
Yeah.
You like sized each other up and he was just, like, that was like, he's just, I thought that would translate into him being like kind of like quirky on screen. Not everyone can do it. It's really hard when those lights, like something about going like being having a personality and then the lights come on and that camera turns on and then some people just don't, they're not the same that they are off camera on camera. It's not.
Yeah. Being on camera is tough, man. It's
really hard. That's why like when people criticize the broadcasters and stuff, I'm like, dude, you don't understand how hard it is, especially calling a fight. It's like really, it's not like calling any other sport. It's like really hard to call a fight and be an analyst. Especially
it's one of the hardest things you can do in sports.
Especially if you're not a fighter, like, you know, I call these fights for MVP and like, I have my lane, like Nonito calls the technical stuff. I'll give you what I see. I'll give you a scorecard. I'll give you like a story. I'll give you what this guy, what I think is going to happen and all that. But the technical stuff, I'm still learning and it's fun as hell. And I learned so much from you. I learned so much from Donaire. I learned a lot from Paulie my short time calling fights with him. It's an art. It's like something that you never fully like get. You just keep practicing, I should say. You know, you keep perfecting your craft, right?
Yeah, it's reps, Dan, is what it is. It's just reps.
Mm-hmm.
It's
absolutely
reps. Everything takes a, you know, what is it, the 10,000 hour
10,000 hours?
Yeah, I mean,
like a pilot.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but you still need to put your reps in to be good at the sport.
I love it. I love calling fights. It's so much fun. I'm calling a fight this Wednesday. DiBella Entertainment.
I am too. I'm calling the same card.
Well, no, you're not.
Yes, I am.
It's on Pro Box.
Yeah.
You're coming to New York?
No. I'm calling it from a studio down here.
Yeah, something is... It's a Broadway Boxing Heroes on the Hudson fight card.
Yep.
That is airing live on Pro Box. Mm-hmm. And it's also airing on a tape delay down the line on MSG. Mm-hmm. Me, Justin Shackle, who is the voice of the...
Yes,
one of the voices of the Yankees.
Love him.
And Corey Erdman.
Yes. What a group of... not very tall white dudes. That is,
dude, that was our team for years.
If you guys showed up to a basketball court, I would be, I don't play basketball, like, yep, I'll take them.
We're gonna bludgeon these guys, we're gonna Murtazalaya of them.
I'm like, take these guys,
yeah. We used to call fights all the time. 2019,
that's a very solid crew, very solid.
Yeah, we're calling fights for for you can watch them live on Pro Box. I don't know.
Shackle with the voice, Erdman with the blow by blow and the nerding out. And then you with the history and the numbers. That's a great call.
Doing some in-ring interviews too. So you can watch that on Pro Box on Wednesday night. I don't want to talk too much about the Skull Shishkin fight. It was horrible.
I don't care.
One of the worst title fights in years. And IBF.
Dan, it was on paper a bad fight. And right. Then it shows up. And actually, for once, what you expect happens. And then it's not good.
IBF, they were coming on the fire last week for, pwn titles and all this. And this was a fight.
And then this fight. They make, they strip Better Biev. They strip Usyk. They strip Canelo, and then they allow these fights. Crawford, and they allow this fight.
All right, I had some people chirping me back because I said, in terms of the Beterbiev fight, I was like, Beterbiev, just drop the title. Like, we know that you and and Bivol are the two best. So if you guys fight again, and there's three belts on the line.
There's also one less governing body you have to pay.
I said that
guys, you have to pay them. You have to pay them. It's insane.
In that case, it would make sense for Beterbiev just to drop the belt. I understand that in some instances, guys like Mirtazalayev would never have the shot that he just had. It's different for every scenario. For the most part, these mandatories.
Because Mirtazalayev, I mean,
what do you mean?
He was our champ. I mean, I know.
Yeah, but he got that shot because he played by the rule. He played the game.
Well, he took a bunch of step aside money from PBC.
He made $2 million in step aside money.
Bingo. You know, so like that guy lied in weight, training, and being ready, and now he's here for the world to see. He played it a different way.
Skull beat Shishkin. Shishkin landed nearly twice as many power punches and landed at a higher percent of his punches. That fight was
awful. When that whole Skull thing came on, it's like, it definitely seems like they want this guy to win. I don't know why, but they want him to win.
So that someone at 168 now can fight for a title. Like if I was Berlanga, if I was Plant, if I was Munguia, if I was Pacheco, I would be running towards William Skull. And
I would assume Munguia, but we'll see.
Any of those guys. Adam Azeem stopped O'Hara Davies, who then retired after the fight.
He's good, man. Definitely needs some more he needs some more work.
Yeah.
But he's gigantic for the weight class. I don't know how that guy makes weight. I watched that boxer card. I watched Anthony Yard. He did not look good at all, which is a shame because I really like him. And Azeem looked good, but also you could see where he was lacking. He needs, he's only got 11 or 12 fights. He needs more seasoning.
The fight everyone wants to see there is Adam Azeem versus Dalton Smith at 140. It's like a domestic, like can't miss prospect fight. Like winner moves on to the next rung.
I mean, I think Adam Azeem beats all those guys over there.
Yeah, but Adam Azeem is with Boxer. Dalton Smith is with Matchroom. It can get made under the Saudi regime now. But Azeem has turned it down, I believe. I could be wrong here. I know Boxers is even more careful than like Golden Boy is with their fighters because it's a very, very small stable. Right. And Ben Shalom has to be extremely cautious with his fighters.
Well, he should be smart. He should be smart with Azeem because Azeem is a legitimate star.
Yeah.
He needs to build him properly.
Next week, we'll preview Regis Prograis, Jack Catterall, and some other fights. What?
I don't care about that fight.
I know.
Nobody does either.
It's a hard fight to get like jazzed up about because I don't think either guy will ever get back in the title picture.
No, nobody cares.
So what exactly is this fight for? I like Jack Catterall. I like him.
He's a great guy. I like him. I like Prograis too, but great guy.
I like Prograis too, but that Devin Haney fight is I can't not think about that fight.
Yeah.
He got derobed. He looked naked in there. He got his clothes taken off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He got pantsed.
Mm-hmm.
Remember getting pantsed?
And then Haney went out there and got knocked silly by a guy who didn't train. So.
Levels. All right, everyone. Enjoy your week. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Go Yankees World Series, baby.
Let's go.
All right, everyone. See you next time.